As households get richer in all the countries we've looked at, they spend less in the informal sector, more in the formal sector. Even if the government only sets a flat rate of consumption tax, de facto, you're going to find that the rich pay more in taxes than the poor.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Inequality, it's high in many low and middle-income countries, and we imagine that taxation is the policy tool that would reduce that inequality. But does a personal income tax or a consumption tax work in the same way in a low middle-income country as it would in a high-income country? If those taxes don't, does this mean we should rethink what is optimal for taxation policy? Lucy Gaden of Queen Mary University London is one of the authors of a new paper on this topic, and I've come to her office to talk to her about it. Lucy, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Lucy, I started off with inequality is high in low middle income countries. We better define how high.
Yeah, sure. One way we like to think about inequality is to look at, you know, how much the richest in the society own of total income, total GDP. In developing countries, the 10% richest of households tend to earn between 40 and 60%, so roughly half, bit more, bit less, of total income in the country. That's roughly comparable to the inequality levels we see in the United States. So that's pretty high, because we tend to think about of the US as a quite high income inequality country.
And if we're thinking about development, can we say that this is too high?
That's really hard to say, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's a lot of theories on the relationship between inequality and economic growth. It's very hard to pin down a causal relationship. What we can say is there's too many poor people in developing countries. That's pretty much a definition of developing countries.
Mm-hmm.
We can also say, we know now, you know, that to get a lot of people lifted out of poverty, we need more investments in infrastructure, particularly human capital infrastructure, health and education. That means government need revenues because they're going to have to do a lot of these investments. And that means taxation.
Yeah, we spoke to Penny Goldberg a couple of weeks ago, and she was lamenting for the purposes of development that there are not enough middle-class people in a lot of low-income countries. I guess that's part of the same thing.
That is completely part of the same thing. What makes a middle-class person? In part, it's education. And what makes an educated person? In part, it's government spending on schools.
Now, you have discussed in this paper two different types of taxation. So on the one hand, income tax. On the other hand, a consumption tax. We could call it VAT, value-added tax. So for policymakers, what are the advantages of each of these types of tax? I suppose the disadvantages as well.
So let's take, you know, textbook example and not thinking yet about rich versus poor country. The income tax is a great progressive tax in the sense that it redistributes. The way the income tax works is typically you have different income tax rates that people pay depending on their level of income. As they get richer, they pay higher taxes. That's a very efficient way of making sure that richer people pay more into government revenues than poorer people. That's a good thing, and that makes the income tax, you know, the redistribution star if you're in a tax world. One disadvantage of income taxes is that to tax people's incomes, you need to observe them well. And by taxing richer households or richer individuals more, you're giving them strong incentives to try to hide their income, to try to evade the tax. So that's a problem. Consumption taxes, such as VAT value-added taxes, they're the revenue-raising stars of the tax world. They're levied on consumption. Consumption is a broad base. Everyone consumes. And then that means it's quite easy to get a lot of revenues. The problem with that is precisely because everyone consumes, they tend to affect pretty much everyone in the same way, and so you don't achieve much redistribution. If you set a flat rate of 15% on consumption, in a textbook simple world, it means everybody pays taxes on roughly 15% of their consumption, and that's not progressive at all. Then if you realize that some people save more than others, it gets worse, because richer households tend to save more than poorer households. This means that they can pay less from a consumption taxes than poorer households. So it's not great from a redistribution perspective, at least in the textbook world.
At least in the textbook world, we started from the point of view that achieving some redistribution would be a good thing. From that point of view, what's the optimal way to use taxation to achieve this redistribution?
Well, again, in this textbook world, if you have no problem observing incomes or consumption, mm-hmm. let's go for the income tax. It's the simple one. You want to take more from the rich than the poor, then it's that easy to just have a higher rate on the incomes of the rich relative to the poor.
Okay, but we're not in the textbook world, are we? We're in the real world. And so for tax policy, you start off in this paper, you distinguish between the statutory tax rates that we hear about when there's a budget, when there's policy made, and they're de facto and economic incidence. So we've got some terms here we need to describe. What are these de facto and economic incidences of tax?
It's actually not that complicated. So let me walk you through these three. So statutory incidence is just legally who has to pay taxes. When you do your grocery shopping, you go to a supermarket, the supermarket by law has to pay consumption taxes or VAT on what you're buying. De facto incidence is what happens if the law is not perfectly well enforced. So in my example, then if you go to your supermarket to buy your groceries, but in practice your supermarket is evading taxes, it's supposed to pay taxes, but it's not, then it's not bearing any de facto incidence. So de facto and statutory incidence differ as soon as the law is not perfectly well enforced. And then there's economic incidence, which economists love thinking about. And that's really who bears the real burden of taxation. Grocery example again, you know, the supermarket you're buying from has to legally pay the taxes, but the tax amount may not come from its bottom line, its profit. It may be that to pay the tax, it's increasing the price that you have to pay when you're buying your groceries, in mm-hmm. which case the burden, the economic incidence is on you, the consumer, not on the retailer.
And there will always be a difference from your description between the statutory, the de facto, and the economic incidence.
Not necessarily. In a world where the law is perfectly well enforced, there's no difference between statutory and de facto. And then economic incidence is a tricky one because it depends on markets, right? Mm-hmm. It may be that for some reasons, the supermarket you're buying from cannot push the tax, the VAT, onto its consumer prices, so it has to pay the VAT out of its profits. But in practice, typically, there's a lot of difference between these three.
Okay, let me ask it in this way then. In a low-income country compared to a high-income country, are these gaps likely to be big?
Yes, very much so. And that's been the takeaway from a bunch of very exciting recent research. A really key thing in developing countries when you're thinking about taxes is the informal sector. What we mean by that is there's a large share of economic transactions, incomes, consumption, wealth, whatever, mm-hmm. in developing countries that's outside the tax net, not observed by the government at all. There's a lot of firms that operate in developing countries that the government just doesn't know about. That's what we call the informal sector. And that means that even if a government says it wants to tax all firms or all individuals, it's de facto not going to be able to, because a lot of those are going to fall outside of the tax net. So that means there's a big difference between statutory and de facto incidence in developing countries.
Okay, so let's have a look at how the tax collection and the function of tax differs in low, middle income countries. And it is fascinating. So first of all, what does your research show about the share of GDP that is collected as taxes and the type of taxes which are used to collect that as countries develop?
Let's start with the most simple thing. How much do governments levy in taxes? Typically, mm-hmm. we measure this as a share of GDP. And over the range of development levels that we can observe in the world today, that roughly triples from about 10% of GDP collected in taxes in the poorest countries to about 30% in rich countries. This is excluding social security contributions. It would get even higher with social security contributions. So overall, size of the state, if you want, triples as countries develop. But they also tax pretty differently. What we see is that developing countries, countries at an early stage of development, tend to rely more on indirect taxes for their revenues. So indirect taxes are things like consumption taxes mm-hmm. and tariffs, so taxes on trade. So in low and middle income countries, they're about 2/3 of total revenues. And as countries become richer, they rely on those a lot less to raise revenues. What happens instead is they start raising personal income taxes a lot more. So personal income taxes in rich countries today are about 1/3 of total revenues. In low-income countries, they're about 10-15%. So that's the big change. As countries get richer, indirect taxes fall, and personal income taxes rise as a share of total taxes.
As an economy develops, what are the problems and the potential, I guess, of collecting more income tax?
What's interesting here is to go back to the informal sector story. With the informal sector, what we know happens as economies develop is the size of the informal sector falls. So the share of total incomes generated or transactions observed by the government increases. One reason for that is self-employment falls as countries get richer.
Mm-hmm.
In very poor countries, most people are self-employed, and that makes it very hard to tax their incomes because there's no alternative information on their income, as opposed to employees. As countries get richer, more and more people start working in large firms because as countries get richer, firms get larger. That's a key structural change over the course of economic development. And so more and more people start working in firms in an employee relationship. And that makes it a lot easier to tax their incomes because the contractual relationship between employers and employees leaves a paper trail. And so Anders Jensen in his paper would show you that as countries get richer, self-employment as a share of total employment falls, we see the personal income tax gradually expand to cover more and more of the population.
But as you change that personal income tax, it covers more people, and perhaps you would want to make it more progressive. Then how do people who are being taxed react in low-income countries?
I would say we don't have enough evidence on this, but we're starting to have a bit, some very nice empirical papers that are looking at what happens when we raise the personal income taxes. How do people respond? In particular, how do the rich respond? That's really what this literature is focused on. And what papers tend to find is that the responses are very large compared to rich countries, i.e., when you raise the tax rate on people, they respond by trying to shield their income from the tax more in developing countries than in rich countries. In simpler terms, as the tax rate increases, people declare less income to the tax authorities. And that's a problem because it means that raising taxes is less of a good instrument to raise revenues and increase progressivity than if people responded very little.
I see. So on the surface, the tax might be very progressive, but because people respond to that by just not paying tax on very much of their income, that progressivity just doesn't exist when you look at the numbers.
It exists less than you would if you only looked at statutory incidents. So there we have the difference between de facto and statutory again. But that sounds quite pessimistic. One thing I want to flag, though, is that it also implies, and we do see this empirically, that efforts that tax authorities make to enforce their taxes better, having more audits, having more tax officials, using more technology, can make the tax system more progressive, including the personal income tax.
What we are left with is a tax system that then is forced to rely on these indirect taxes. So therefore, can we say overall that the tax system ends up less progressive than we might want it to be? Does this undermine the progressivity of tax?
No, and that's the key insight, I would argue novel insight, from a recent paper of mine with Pierre Bacquès and Anders Jensen, where we look at consumption taxes in developing countries. And we really focus on this de facto incidence, so the fact that there's a large share of the economy that doesn't pay taxes, and what this means for progressivity. Now, key insight really is to look at data to ask how much households at different income levels in different developing countries spend in the informal sector. What's the share of their budget that's spent in the informal sector as opposed to formal sector? So how much they're spending from, you know, local shops or markets where we're pretty sure there's no taxes paid versus large big supermarkets where even in developing countries, taxes are paid. And what we find is that systematically in all the 32 developing countries we've been able to look at, that share, that informal budget share, falls as households get richer within a country. As households get richer in Rwanda, in Mexico, in Brazil, in Burundi, in all the countries we've looked at, we see that they spend less in the informal sector, more in the formal sector. And that means that even if the government only sets a flat rate of consumption tax, so it levies the same tax rate on all kind of products, even if the government does something as simple as that, de facto, you're going to find that the rich pay more in taxes than the poor because a large share of the poor's consumption is informal, so there's no taxes paid on it anyways. So that makes the tax system a lot more progressive than we thought. Without the informal sector, setting a flat tax of, say, 15% on all consumption wouldn't be progressive at all. Because of this informal sector and the fact that the poor consume more from it, what we find is that on average, for the average developing country in our sample, the richest 10% of the population end up paying an effective tax rate that's twice as high as the poorest 10%. So some progressivity, not as much as you'd achieve with a fully fledged, perfectly enforced personal income tax, but still not nothing.
In developing countries, government policy is very much geared towards taking people out of the informal sector and into the formal sector. So does what you're talking about align well with these existing policies?
Well, actually, one implication of our findings is that when governments do that, it could have regressive effects. If, because the poor consume less from the formal sector, consumption taxes are progressive, that means that if you start pushing all these firms that the poor are buying stuff from into the formal sector, the tax burden could start falling more on the poor as you do this. That's not to say you shouldn't try to increase the size of the formal sector. There's a lot of reasons to do this. It is one reason to caution about the potential equity or redistribution effects of any efforts to formalize the informal sector.
Now, you did mention earlier that there are technological ways in which we can increase the tax take. We're used to them in high-income countries. Do they have potential in low-income countries as well for identifying and collecting taxes?
Yes, there's definitely potential. And there's a lot of very recent ongoing work, often working closely with tax authorities in very low-income countries, that try to reach this potential. There's tons of things you can do with technology. You know, one of them is you can use satellite data to try to get a more up-to-date version of your property register. So know where the properties are and how big they are. That helps you raise taxes on property. That's been shown to work in Italy, and there's people working on trying to use these kinds of things in developing countries. You can also give tablets or smartphones to your tax inspectors on which they have all the relevant information so that when they're interacting with the taxpayers, they can show them, well, here's my hard information on what your tax liabilities are. You can try to use technology to remove discretion away from tax officials. In a lot of low-income settings, tax officials, to approximate, can choose who they try to push taxes onto or not. And you can try to have algorithms, technology that determine who's going to get targeted by tax officials or not. There's a lot that can be done. There's starting to be some evidence that that does lead to higher taxes collected. What we really don't know very well yet is whether that leads to more or less progressive tax systems. So there's more taxes being collected. We don't necessarily know very well who pays these new taxes.
And are we seeing innovations in this area, policy innovations in this area that we can look back on in a few years' time and say this did make a difference?
One innovation that's not necessarily linked to the tax system that may have big implications for the tax system is the fact that payments are shifting away from cash. You know, 10 years ago, most payments were in cash in developing countries, to electronic forms of payments. You go to any large city in sub-Saharan Africa or Asia, you can pay in a lot of places with your phone. And that's potentially very important for the tax authorities because it means all these transactions used to be absolutely invisible for the government. Cash, you can't trace it. Two, there's now a paper trail between your phone and the card machine that's used by the vendor. That means some bank somewhere has information. And that means the government potentially could leverage this to have more information on transactions, therefore more information on the sales that firms are making. So far, the little evidence we have on this is fairly mixed. I have one paper on India that would say that in India, it has helped tax collection a little bit. There's evidence from other countries. There's some in Uruguay where it hasn't. But there's a lot happening in this sphere, and it could radically change how people interact with the tax authorities as well.
I'm sure we'll talk about this again. But for now, Lucy, thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim.
The paper is called Tax Equity in Low and Middle Income Countries. The authors are Pierre Bachat, Anders Jensen, and Lucy Gaden. It is published in the Journal of Economic Perspectives, 38, number 1, 2024. This has been a Vox Dev Talk, the best way to make sure you don't miss an episode. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, you will find us there. Our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org, where you will also find articles about the topics we feature.